Please include the worldwide outreach of issues, etc. in your year-end giving. With 1 month left in 2018, we're $93,000 short of projected expenses. You can make a secure online gift at issuesetc.org. You can also make a year-end tax-deductible donation by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I saw this headline caught my attention. Ring of Roman Governor Pontius Pilate, who crucified Jesus, found in Herodian site in West Bank. The discovery was made 50 years ago, and only now are we hearing about this inscription on this tiny ring, a name, Pilate, and perhaps a signet ring of the very Pilate that we read about in the New Testament. Joining us to talk about this discovery on this Monday afternoon, Dr. Craig Evans, Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Dr. Evans, welcome back.
Thank you very much. Good to be back with you, Todd.
Why was it that for some time, the more liberal end of Bible scholarship questioned the existence of the man Pontius Pilate?
Well, you know, that became in vogue, 150 years ago at least, in some circles. Now, it wasn't mainstream at all, even among so-called liberals. But there was this radical view, I think it may have begun with Bruno Bauer, a German in the 1840s, and it was arguing that Jesus didn't exist. And so part of the argument was the New Testament Gospels were just all fairy tales and mythology. And so because, you know, there was no archaeological evidence for Pilate at that time, and you did have him mentioned in a couple of texts by Romans and in the second century. And so the argument was, well, you know, those are just based on what Christians were claiming, the story the Christians had recently made up. And it was a radical view. Not too many people bought into it. It hasn't died yet. There still is a school of thought called mythicism that argues that Jesus didn't exist. But archaeology, of course, has destroyed the idea that Pilate didn't exist because we actually have his name inscribed on stone and now apparently on a brass ring as well.
So kind of set it in its context, how would you describe the artifact that was discovered 50 years ago?
Well, it's a brass or bronze ring, and I'm looking at it right now, and I'll tell you, it's to press into clay or press against wax. It's a seal ring, and so it would then spell out the person's name. And, it's one thing to look at a facsimile, and the letters are very clear. It says Pilato, and so probably to be understood in the genitive sense. It's Greek, not Latin, as some people say. And so it would mean of Pilate or belonging to Pilate. And then right in the middle of the ring is what looks like a wine amphora. Just looking at it clean, you can barely make it out. And when these artifacts are found, remember, finding rings, I've found rings. I've been at archaeological sites. I've been a volunteer digger at different sites. You find pieces of metal, you find coins, they're usually badly corroded, they're encrusted with dirt, and, you know, you have to have them professionally cleaned. And if you've got hundreds of pieces of that sort of thing, and then you got thousands of pieces of broken pottery, pieces of glass, even bones and other things, it's a huge inventory to work through. And so I suspect it didn't catch anyone's eye. They probably thought, well, this is a cheap brass ring of some sort from antiquity, and nobody bothered getting around to cleaning it. But when they finally did, they were quite surprised to see that Pilate's name is on it.
What can you tell us about the site where it was discovered?
It's an interesting site. I've been to it many times. It's called the Herodian, and it's a few miles south of Jerusalem. It's in a wilderness setting. There's not much around it. And it was a hill that Herod the Great built up, and he made it much higher, created almost what looks like a medieval fortress with four towers, one of them especially large at one end. And that's, according to Josephus, the Jewish historian of the first century, that's where Herod's body was buried, in a secret chamber. We're not sure we have found it. You know, Ehud Netzer thought he found it a number of years ago, and then tragically fell through a railing and died at that work site. Anyway, there's a lot of mystery surrounding it, and Herod built it there because that's where he stood and faced his enemy, Antigonus, and fought a desperate battle and won. And so he saw the value of the spot, and so he fortified it as a refuge. Well, anyway, it is a little surprising that we'd find a ring belonging to Pilate there. I'm curious to know how it got there. Had the ring been found at Caesarea Maritima, where on the coast where Pilate lived when he was governor over Judea and Samaria, that wouldn't surprise me at all. That's where the stone was found that has his name on it. But why the ring ended up being found at the Herodian, that's interesting.
That in itself is kind of a mystery, because if we are to understand the gospel accounts, there was no love lost between the Roman governor and the titular king there in Jerusalem, was there?
No, of course not. And, you know, Pilate, you know, is one of the Roman governors that had to be sent to Jerusalem because Herod's son Archelaus had been, we think, in the year 6, had been removed. He was just incompetent, and he was violent and cruel. And so it became governors. And, of course, it was about 20 years after his removal that Pilate had his turn to be governor. And Herod's other sons that were surviving, Philip up north and to the east, and then Herod Antipas, who's very well known in the Gospels because he was the Tetrarch of Galilee, so he's up north and to the west. And Pilate, we don't think it got along real well with these people, and the Gospels hint at that. How it is that Pilate's ring would have wandered, I mean, I don't know, maybe during the rebellion that broke out in 66, I don't know, maybe something was looted, his ring fell into the hands of rebels, and rebels, see, were holed up in the Herodian, and so that's possible one explanation for how it got there.
We're talking with Dr. Craig Evans. He is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins and the Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, the Archaeological Evidence about the Discovery of a Ring Inscribed with the Name Pilate. We'll talk a little bit more about it on the other side of the break. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
We start to provide caring responses for transgender children in the public square. Find our public voice.
Dr. Beverly Yonke, speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Christians need to be seen, be heard, be well read, bear witness to the truth, and define in godly language what it means to flourish as a boy and a girl, a man and a woman, a husband and a wife. That's a challenge, dear people, to be informed, to be unapologetic about stopping the abuse of children, to speak the truth without sacrificing love, to teach our children, to equip our schools, to gather resources, to strengthen our families, and to glorify God in the task that He set before us.
You can listen to Dr. Yonke's presentation, Making the Case for the Church's Response to the Transgender Child, on a recording of our 2018 conferences. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armedforces.
What does it mean to say that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us? This great mystery is the thread that runs throughout the December issue of The Lutheran Witness. Some articles celebrate the birth of Jesus. Others explore the theological mystery of human embodiment. Still others do both at once, providing a holiday feast of reflection on Christ's incarnation. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the discovery of a ring inscribed with the name Pilot. Dr. Craig Evans is our guest. So, Dr. Evans, how would a ring like this have been used by Pilate, the governor there?
Well, you know, Roman soldiers, and Pilate was a soldier. You know, we talk about him as a governor, and we think of him as a politician, but his rank as prefect meant that he was actually the head of a legion, and so he had troops under his command. And what the Roman legions, a lot of people don't know this, but they were actively engaged in making product, making bricks, roof tiles, things like that were very common. And we actually have, you know, tiles stamped. And by the way, they made bread, too. And there'd be stamps on the loaves of bread when they were baked. And we have found the stamps. And it'll say League, L-E-G, which, of course, is an abbreviation for Legion. And then there'd be like an X, meaning Legion 10, which was in Israel at one time. And it had the emblem boar's head, which we think Jesus is alluding to when the swine are cast into the Sea of Galilee. And so Pilate, you know, would have his own ring that would make a stamp. And that was consistent with this. So whatever kinds of products they made, they would stamp names and stamp the name of the legion on it. And so this is not unusual at all. And as I've been thinking about it, it could be he had several of these rings, some of them entrusted to lieutenants who were stationed in various locations throughout his realm. And the Herodian south of Jerusalem was part of his realm. That was part of his jurisdiction. So it could be some of his secretaries and lieutenants actually used the ring in the governor's name for putting a stamp, whether it was a wax stamp on a letter, a scroll or something like that, or on a tablet, or perhaps on something made of clay. And the stamp was placed there to show that it had the governor's approval or taxes had been paid or something like that.
Talk a little bit about Pilate's time there. We learned from other sources in history that his time there in Judea was tumultuous. He sometimes had pressure from both the population and from his superiors back in Rome as well. Plus, it wasn't considered a very good assignment, was it?
Well, you know, we've heard that. The great movie Ben-Hur with Charlton Heston gives you that impression. The actor who plays Pontius Pilate makes a dismissive remark about his appointment to be governor. I'll tell you, it was a plum appointment. Even now in ruins, the Herod's palace that overlooks the Mediterranean Sea is just a magnificent spot. There would have been a lot of governors, I think, that would love to have that appointment, Caesarea Maritima, overlooking the Mediterranean. And the town itself was not shabby, and it had a hippodrome that could be horse races. It had a theater, and if you were sitting up in the seats of the theater, looking beyond the stage, you could look right out to the setting sun over the Mediterranean. I mean, boy, that would be pretty neat. So I'm not too sure if that was considered a poor appointment, but I'll tell you, it did require some political acumen, some political juggling, because the Jewish people could be very difficult to deal with because they weren't like the other Gentiles. They weren't open to polytheism. They weren't open to idols and sacrifices to various gods, sacrifice to the emperor, and that would make it touchy. So Pilate did have some difficulties, but, you know, he was governor for at least 10 years, from 26 to 36 or early 37 when he was removed. And as Danny Schwartz says in the article in Haaretz that's talking about it, I know Danny, he's really a sharp scholar, Jewish scholar. You know, he's made the case that Pilate may have been appointed governor as early as the year 19, which would mean he was governor for about 17 years, which is an extraordinarily long tenure for governor back in those days. Most governors were governors 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, something like that. It was rare that they were governors for 10 or more years. So Pilate's rule couldn't have been that bad. And even if you read in Josephus and Philo, two Jewish writers of the first century who do not like Pilate at all, they give him, I would say, it's sort of ambivalent. He's in office at least 10 years, maybe 17, as I just said, and he has only three violent encounters with his people, and one of them he actually backs down. So it's really only two violent encounters, and it's the second one involving the Samaritans that gets him removed from office. So on the whole, I would say he was fairly successful. He just really gets a black eye because we have surviving sources that accuse him of bribery. And Todd, I've read the Roman sources. There isn't a governor in that period of time not accused of bribery. That was just, you know, it was expected. If you were a governor somewhere, and after a few years, you came home and you were rich. That was just expected. So I would say Pilate was probably average, and he was way above average for tenure.
So do we know what became of him?
Well, there are Christian legends about him, and I view them with suspicion. I think that what happened was he was recalled from office by Emperor Tiberius, but before he got back to Rome, and this is early the year 37, before he gets back to Rome, the emperor has died. Tiberius died suddenly and unexpectedly in March of 37. And so then, of course, there's a new emperor, and we just don't know what then happens to Pilate. There's no Roman record, no Roman historian, Dio Cassius, Tacitus, Suetonius, Plutarch, none of them. No one says anything about him. And you get much later legends in Christian circles about Pilate being banished, or he's discouraged, depressed, has nightmares, hangs himself, or something like that. I don't think we can trust any of those sources. So to answer your question, we simply don't know.
And the encounter that he is most well known for, this trial before Jesus' crucifixion, is it unusual that someone like Jesus would have had a trial before the Roman governor of the entire region?
Oh, it's a little bit unusual, but, you know, Rome has capital authority. No one else does. And it's not likely that it would execute somebody without Pilate personally approving it. I think the only reason that Pilate meets the accused face-to-face is Pilate happens to be there. He is in Jerusalem. He normally lives, as I said, out west at Caesarea Maritima, but he's there because he's showing political savvy. It's the Jewish holiday. It's Passover. We're told that each year he releases a prisoner. This is really smart politics because he knows perfectly well what Passover is all about. It's about the Jewish people delivered by God from Egyptian slavery and servitude. And a lot of people made parallels with Roman sovereignty over Israel. So he's not stupid. He knows that. So what he's doing is saying, hey, look, I recognize the importance of your holiday. I want to celebrate it with you. And in the spirit of Passover, I'm happy to release to you anyone you want from holding or from prison. And that's what he did with this Barabbas character. That's really smart. So he would have been in Jerusalem anyway, and it just so happens when he's there, the ruling priests want Jesus dead before the Passover holiday's over. Because once it's over, there could be, you know, the people could become inflamed with ideas of liberation from the Roman yoke. They might scream and protest over the idea of two or three Jewish men being executed, just one more example of Roman brutality, etc. And so I can understand the political pressures there. So on the one hand, he knows Jesus is a potential danger. People might rise up under his banner. He wants to accommodate the wishes of the ruling priests. But I think Pilate has enough sense to know that when you get right down to it, it's just a lot of jealousy going on here. Jesus is more popular with the crowds than the ruling priests are. He knows the ruling priests are despised by a lot of people as being avaricious and oppressive. So he's trying to navigate through the middle of this. So that's why he makes a plebiscite out of it, says, you guys decide, you make the call. And of course, that's a politically, it's spineless, but it's a smart move, and it works for him. He executes Jesus and two other men, and there's no blowback on him. When the holiday's over, he goes back to Caesarea, and Israel remains peaceful right up until he has that clash a few years later with the people of Samaria.
Dr. Craig Evans is Distinguished Professor of Christian Origins at the Dean of School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University, author of several books, including Jesus and His World, The Archaeological Evidence. Find out more about this book and purchase it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Evans, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome.
When we come back, it's time to continue our series on Lutheran catechesis. We are going to be in the Fifth Commandment with Pastor Peter Bender, and we're going to talk about the murder of Abel. Stay tuned. Was the night before Jesus, when all through the earth every creature was stirring for a new baby's birth. Words from The Night Before Jesus, Concordia Publishing House's new Christmas book. The Night Before Jesus would make a great Christmas gift for children, grandchildren, and godchildren ages 3 through 5. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, The Night Before Jesus.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you plan to do some online Christmas shopping on Amazon, you can help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. Just go to smile.amazon.com, sign into your Amazon account, enter Lutheran Public Radio into the charitable organization search field, and click Select. A percentage of your purchase will be donated to Issues Etc. Smile.amazon.com and choose Lutheran Public Radio. Thanks for your support.